it just sort of breaks my heart that as well as dealing with all the impacts of being sexually assaulted, they're also dealing with feeling like it's their responsibility to keep the world safe and to report and speak up. And I guess what I would say is your responsibility is to yourself and your healing, and that you've been through enough already, and you need to do what feels right for you.
The Hookup. Love and f***ing. On Triple J.
Warning, sex and adult themes.
Content warning, this podcast may be triggering to survivors of sexual assault. It's safe to say that the American presidential election this year was one like no other. It's like nothing we've ever seen before. It was incredibly dirty, and the election of President-elect Donald Trump has a lot of people and minorities feeling nervous about what the next 3 or 4 years are going to look like for them. And this includes survivors of sexual assault. In October this year, a video was released in which Trump openly brags about grabbing and groping women, triggering many survivors of sexual assault to relive their own incredibly painful experiences. He says in the video, "You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful women. I just start kissing them," he says in the video. "And when you're a star, they let you do it. They let you do anything. Grab them by the pussy, you can do anything." And Trump has denied all accusations made about him, and he called the women liars and threatened to sue them after the election. But this just isn't a concern just for the US. It's close to home as well. Supporters of Trump were kicked out of an election party at the University of Sydney after they started chanting, "Grab them by the pussy, that's how we do it." I just can't imagine how that must feel to hear that as a survivor of sexual assault. And this week, you've been in contact with us at The Hookup with your concerns around disclosing and reporting sexual assault in the wake of the Trump election. We'll get to your email that brought us to discuss this topic in just a moment. And if you are experiencing or have experienced sexual assault or domestic or family violence and are looking for support, someone who you can call is 1-800-RESPECT. And as always, there is someone to talk to at Lifeline, which is 13 11 14. In with me in the studio tonight is psychologist Ursula Benstead, who specialises in domestic and sexual assault and also counsels at the Western Region Centre Against Sexual Assault, and Detective Senior Sergeant Anthony Mercer, who manages Sexual Offence and Child Abuse Investigation Team at Victoria Police. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Ursula, why might the election of Trump be triggering for some survivors of sexual assault?
I just think there's too many reasons to list, but I think that really it's just that condoning of a culture that objectifies women and says, you know, you don't matter, and what has happened to you is not serious, and it doesn't matter. And I think anything that, you know, condones and supports those sorts of attitudes in the community, It just does make survivors feel that much more unsupported and like what has happened to them is not important.
And President-elect Trump has denied all accusations and has since said the comments were locker room talk, and has said in a statement that anyone who knows me knows these words don't reflect who I am. I said it, I was wrong, and I apologise. Would these words give anyone, particularly survivors of sexual assault, much comfort, do you think?
No, I don't think they would, because survivors of sexual assault would be very used to, particularly if their perpetrator is known to them, of them presenting another face to the world. Mm. So I think that those words would ring very hollow. And the fact that, you know, a lot of people seem to have believed those words is, you know, really, really discouraging and frightening.
And Anthony, what do you think we need to change about our attitudes towards sexual assault in the way that it's spoken about by, you know, larger figures in the media?
Look, I think culturally the community needs to understand that there are unique signifiers which make victims of sexual assault more vulnerable. You know, vicarious trauma comes in many forms. The spoken or written word is not always the thing that will trigger a response in a a victim of sexual assault or family violence for that matter. So I think culturally we need to understand, be more sympathetic, but we also need to be more sensitive to the types of words and language we use. And we also need to be much more aware of how our behaviour and our language affects all kinds of people, not just victims of sexual and family violence.
So, Anthony, what kind of language do you think we should be using?
Well, I think we need to be respectful and tolerant, first of all. We need to understand that we don't know everyone's journey and we don't know what anyone else has been through. But particularly if we do know that someone has been a survivor of sexual assault or family violence, we need to be really mindful about being really sensitive to the types of conversations we might have with them. Specifically, I'm talking from a police perspective about, when they're reporting those events to us and when they want to tell their story, they need to be congratulated for being brave enough to tell their story in the first place. And we need to make sure that we're sensitive in the way in which that we get them to tell us their story.
Absolutely. And we will be talking with you in a moment about what you can expect if you make a report of sexual violence. We've just received a text on 0439 757 555. It says, Trump calling these women liars and threatening to sue them after the election. Do you think that that might discourage people from reporting sexual assault?
I hope not. Secondly, yeah, it might. I mean, I think one of the biggest barriers for people reporting a sexual assault is that they feel they won't be believed. And certainly from a Victoria Police perspective, is that we encourage people to tell us their story. If you're brave enough to come forward, which it takes incredible bravery to come forward, we ask victims, survivors, to tell us their story first and foremost, because there is enormous benefit in being able to tell your story and be believed when you tell your story.
And Ursula, you're a psychologist. Could we get your perspective on that?
I think that what is really important is that survivors be supported in what they want to do, and some might want to report and some may not. And I guess I just want young people to know that there are services like the CASAs that I work for, and there's sexual assault services in every state that will help you talk through and work through what feels right for you. And if you are thinking about reporting to the police, then there's like myself, a counsellor advocate, can talk you through what might happen, what the process would be, and give you all that information and support, and just work it through in your own time.
You sent us an email via the hookup at abc.net.au, and the listener asked to remain anonymous, but we'll call her Rachel. Rachel wrote that the coverage of American survivors of sexual assault being upset by the election of Trump brought her to tears. Rachel has been sexually assaulted twice, once at the loss of her virginity, and the email reads, "Both times I was so ashamed and convinced it was my own fault. I never told my parents or reported the rapes. In the years following, I told my romantic partners when the time was right, but still never my parents. My parents saw me crying reading these stories during the election, and my father called me a bleeding heart for shedding tears over something I can do nothing about. I feel like I should tell him about my rapes, but I don't know how he will react. I want to tell him because I'd like to think that if I shared my story, someone might care enough to empathise like I do with all the men and women out there being abused. It might help someone blow the whistle when I could not. And to inspire the younger generation to stand up, men and women together, and say, no, we won't let this continue when I could not. But doesn't this make me a hypocrite when I can't even tell my own parents? How do I tell them without hurting them? How can I make a difference when I'm too scared to tell the closest to me?" As I said, I'm joined by Detective Senior Sergeant Anthony Mercer and psychologist Ursula Benstead. Ursula, I think we'll start with you. How important is it to tell people? And it would be impossible to keep this to yourself, right? Or am I wrong?
I think it's really hard to keep it to yourself. People
that I counsel will often talk about it being exhausting, feeling like they're just having to sort of wear a mask and just pretend that all this other stuff isn't going on for them. It's really hard to have real connections with people if they don't really know what's going on for you, and it can be really isolating. So I guess I would just really encourage people like Rachel to get the support of a counsellor. Most of the people that I counsel, they will say to me, and parents is a tough one, they'll often say, I couldn't possibly tell my father, he dropped dead of a heart attack, I couldn't do it. But, you know, I mean, I've been doing this work for about 20 years now, and I've never had a parent drop dead of a heart attack when someone, you know, has disclosed. And often it's an immense relief, not just for the person who's been sexually assaulted, but for those close to them as well, because they know something's not right. They know something's up with their loved one, and it's actually much more distressing to not know what's going on than to actually know what's going on. So I guess I'd just encourage, like, at Centres Against Sexual Assault, counsellors are trained to sort of help people to work through, okay, so what might be the possible reactions you might get? How do you think you might respond to that? How are you going to manage that? So to sort of prepare people for all sorts of scenarios and possibilities and, yeah, I guess, you know, set up appointments and support for soon after and I guess sort of plan these sorts of disclosures.
And Rachel said she felt like a hypocrite because she wants people to speak up about sexual assault but she can't tell her parents. This is a pretty complex situation. Is this a regular thought that survivors go through?
Yes, absolutely. I think that, you know, it just sort of breaks my heart that as well as dealing with all the impacts of being sexually assaulted and often post-traumatic stress disorder, like that's highest in sexual assault survivors than any other trauma group, as well as sort of dealing with all of that, they're also dealing with feeling like it's their responsibility to keep the world safe and to report and speak up. And I guess what I would say is your responsibility is to yourself and your healing and that you've been through enough already and you need to do what feels right for you.
Rachel was speaking about telling lovers or partners at the right time. When might that be? Is there ever a right time for this kind of discussion?
I think it's a hard discussion to have, but I guess I would encourage survivors that if ever they're starting to feel like they're being triggered whilst they're being intimate with their partner and they're trying to not show it or they're going through the motions of having sex but they're actually feeling distressed or in flashback, that's not a good scenario for them, that will continue to sort of re-traumatise them and you know, hold back their healing. So if that's something that's happening for you, I guess I would really encourage you to have some conversations with your partner about your past and what's triggering and how you might feel like you've got some choice and control in your physical intimacy and how you might make that be something that doesn't resemble the sexual assault that happened.
And Anthony, we're talking a little bit here about, you know, people seeking the support of a counsellor for this kind of situation. What sort of training do police go through to be able to handle these really delicate emotional situations?
Yeah, so, you know, we've got 28 sexual offence and child abuse investigation teams spread across the state of Victoria. All of those sockets, as we call them, consist of specifically highly trained investigators, detectives, who have been put through intensive victim-centric training courses, and that includes sexual assault and child abuse, how to deal with high victim impact offending and how to deal with incredibly sensitive, vulnerable victims of sexual assault, child abuse and family violence. So when they report, if a person chooses to come forward and report a matter, they will be reporting to a specialist investigator who understands the nature of the crime in which they are reporting and is also able to connect them with a number of essential support services should they not have already been connected to those.
So, yeah, what is the process that people go through when reporting a sexual assault? Do they just go straight to the police and then they're deferred to someone with more specialised, you know, training?
Yeah, so there are a number of ways, but the most common way, if I can use that term, is that most people will report to a police station, and they may go into a police station, which, can I say, is an incredible act of bravery in itself.
It'd be a hugely intimidating thing to do.
Yep. Absolutely, and our uniformed police members are trained how to then refer these people on very quickly to sexual assault specialists, investigators. There are ways to report directly, obviously, to a socket unit, and that is obviously through CASA or through any other support service. They can report, they can be referred on through that process. But traditionally, it will be through a uniformed police station where they've come in to make a report. They'll be referred to a specialist investigator, and from that point on, that specialist investigator will take them through the process from start all the way through to the very end, so that they don't have to tell their story a number of times to a number of people.
And Anthony, you're from Victoria Police. Does that differ at all, you know, across Australia?
I certainly know of the models in a couple of other states around Australia, and they have very, very similar models. I'm not familiar with the model in every state, of course, but I do know that there are specialist sexual assault investigators in almost every state of Australia, and they certainly view the process very similar to what we do.
Ursula, Rachel in the letter said that she blamed herself for the assaults. Is that a factor of why some people don't report?
I think it is a big factor. I think that, you know, we do have a culture of victim blaming. I think, you know, like, well, what was she doing out?
What was she wearing? Was she drunk?
Yeah. That all of those things still happen today. And I think that part of it is, you know, that our society still has some very sort of misogynist attitudes. But I think part of it is also that people want to protect themselves from the reality that sexual assault is common and it can happen to anyone. Mm. So they want to find a reason why it happened to this girl. And I think that that's why there is a lot of victim blaming. Like, well, my daughter doesn't wear short skirts or go out drinking, therefore she's safe. So I think it is that sort of way of protecting. But what it does is, because we're all members of this society, so we absorb those attitudes too. So, you know, I work with young women all the time saying, yes, but I shouldn't have drunk so much. And it's like, well, it doesn't matter how much you drink. Why should someone tell you how much you have to drink?
And this is so heavily enforced again and again in the way that a lot of these attacks are reported on. It's like drunk woman assaulted by XYZ, you know.
Absolutely.
Joining me is Detective Senior Sergeant Anthony Mercer from Victoria Police and psychologist Ursula Benstead. And also joining us via phone is Nina Funnell. She's a journalist, writer, speaker and survivor of sexual assault. And in 2010, Nina was awarded the Australian Human Rights Community Award for her work in violence prevention and was named a finalist for Young Australian of the Year. She's also on the board of the New South Wales Rape Crisis Centre. Nina, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi. And, oh, I should clarify, I'm not on the board anymore, but, yeah, I have done, I did serve for a while, but thank you.
Yeah, no worries. It's an impressive CV, you know, nonetheless. Hey, so what was your experience disclosing your sexual assault to your friends and family?
Yeah, sure. So I was 23 when I was assaulted. This was back in 2007, so it's quite a, you know, it's quite a while ago now. My assault was by a stranger, which meant that when I disclosed it, I didn't have perhaps the same challenges that a lot of people have, because very often the person who assaults them is someone that they know, often someone that they might trust. So because it was a complete stranger, I wasn't fearful about, you know, maybe mutual friends or mutual family members having an adverse reaction or perhaps taking sides. So I guess that might have made it a little bit easier. Not that it's ever easy, but For me, I still received a mixed bag of reactions. I mean, my family were incredibly supportive, and when I told them, the way that I told them was I said, like, look, I actually just need you to be quiet, and here are all the things that I need you not to say to me right now. And I actually sort of went through and I said, like, I need you not to ask me what I was wearing or how drunk I was or what I was doing or sort of any of those questions which imply that I was responsible for his decision to assault me. And so I guess because of the way that the conversation kind of played out, they were just quiet and they just listened to everything I had to say, and then they just hugged me and told me that they believed me, obviously, and that, that they were going to do whatever they could to stand by me and support me. But not all of my friends were necessarily that supportive. I had a couple of people say, I had one person say to me, you have to admit you're pretty stupid for walking home by myself. I was attacked in while travelling, while travelling home. And that was obviously, you know, that kind of victim-blaming attitude is incredibly difficult to deal with.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for saying that. But so I guess because of those sorts of experiences, I mean, we know that the number one thing that impacts on a person's capacity to recover from sexual assault is the attitudes that they encounter on first disclosure. So if you have a really supportive, positive experience when you disclose and you have people who tell you that they believe you and that it's not your fault and that you're not alone, that can really advance a person towards recovery. But by contrast, if you have a really negative experience where maybe people imply that you're to blame or it's your fault or that they don't believe you or they start nitpicking details or what have you, that can really exacerbate a person's existing trauma.
And I should say we are joined by Detective Senior Sergeant Anthony Mercer. Anthony, how important is that for, you know, the training of police to, you know, the first words that come out of their mouth if someone is reporting to them?
Incredibly important. For them, reporting to police is going to be somewhat traumatic anyway, obviously. So for us, you know, we have a whole story approach. So in other words, we really just want to let someone tell us their story and tell us as much of their story as they feel comfortable in doing. Certainly in disclosure interviews, we try not to ask very many questions at all. We may prompt people to express or expand on a particular matter or point in their story, but really for our point of view, we're just really encouraging for someone to just simply tell us their story and allow us to hear their story so that we can get an idea of exactly what it is that they've come to tell us.
And Nina, what would your advice be to someone who might have a friend disclose to them? How can we make sure we're being as supportive as possible?
Yeah, I mean, like, look, I think it's such a good question. And I think particularly, with young people, the first person that they disclose to, it's not usually a counsellor or the police. Usually the first person they tell is, you know, a best mate or, you know, a sister or someone their own age or someone that they've already got that pre-established relationship with, as opposed to someone that they haven't necessarily met before. And I guess I want to acknowledge up front that hearing a disclosure is also can also be quite traumatic and quite distressing. And so, you know, if listeners out there have received a disclosure, that they can go and get support for that too, to talk through that. And, you know, I think there's things that, like, I do receive disclosures now from time to time, and whenever I do, the things that I will always say to someone, the first thing is, I believe you. You know, I hear what you're telling me and I really believe what you're saying. Because obviously a lot of sexual assault survivors are terrified that they're not going to be believed. The second thing that I'll say is, this is not your fault. What's happened to you, you're not to blame for this. Because again, they're often really worried that it will, you know, either they'll be blamed or what's happened to them will be minimised in some way. And then the third thing that I'll just say to them is, I'll do whatever I can to support you or to listen to you, and you're not alone in this anymore, because again, there is unfortunately still quite a bit of stigma surrounding sexual assault, and the more that we can do to challenge that and erode that and sort of bring it out into the light and realise that the shame sits with the perpetrator, not with the victim or survivor.
Absolutely. Ursula, can I get a quick thought from you on that?
I think that's one of the hardest things for me too, to see survivors carry the shame that should be sitting with the perpetrators. And I think, like Nina was saying, just those reactions of people around them. You know, like I've had young girls whose boyfriends have heard about the rape and sort of accused them of being unfaithful and called them sluts. You know, it's and
yeah,
it
that'd be incredibly traumatic.
Yeah, and it really does set back the healing. Yeah, immensely.
Do you mind if I just jump in though with a very quick comment?
Yeah,
which
of course.
Is, the contrast of that though is, of course, if you have a good reaction, that can do leaps and bounds for a person. And my I was really lucky at the time to have a boss who I told who had the sort of textbook perfect reaction, and she was incredible, and she really, really supported me. And that was probably what ended up prompting me to want to become an advocate in this space. So I guess, you know, what I'd really drive home there is just how important that first response is, and if it's good, that can be life-changing. It can be massive in terms
That's really
of
lovely to hear. Absolutely. I just want to thank you both so much for being with us tonight, Detective Senior Sergeant Anthony Mercer and Psychologist Ursula Benstead. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on The Hookup.
Well, thanks for inviting us, Hannah. Thanks.
Thank you very much for having me.
If you are experiencing issues around this area, you can always call 1-800-RESPECT or Lifeline on 13 11 14. Both lines have somewhere there 24/7. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe and rate us in iTunes. It really helps other people find the show.